I'm Anthony Teasdale from The Europaeum, and this afternoon we do the latest of our quickfire 15-minute interviews with people associated in different ways with The Europaeum, its development, its activities, its contribution to higher education in Europe. And I'm delighted to have as my guest this afternoon Dr. Tracy Sowerby, who's not only a distinguished academic in her own right, but is director of the Scholars Programme at The Europaeum. She was there really, present at the creation from the very start of this. She joined us in 2017. And has been directing each of the programmes from 2018 right the way through to now, four cycles. Tracy, great to have you on board. Tell us a little bit about the origins and the purpose of the Scholars Programme. Where did it come from? What's it designed to achieve?
Thank you, Anthony. In the wake of the Brexit vote, a number of people who were very involved in the Europaeum from different parts of Europe were thinking about how to renew the Europaeum and make it ever more relevant in a slightly more challenging context. And they decided that one of the ways to do that would be to create a programme specifically for doctoral candidates. Because of the nature of the network, it was decided that this should be a part-time programme that students would take in addition to their doctoral studies, and that it would enhance their experience as doctoral candidates. The idea of the programme has always been very much focused on ethical leadership and policy making. And so the idea is to create an accelerated career trajectory for Europe's future leaders. And as I used to joke, we don't want more Boris Johnsons. We want more people who are going to be slightly more ethical when they wield the reins of power or have some form of influence. That's what we're trying to create.
And how do you say it? Already in a way you've hinted at this, but what would you say are its distinctive features that make it different from anything which is offered in the form of doctoral training programmes by any other university in Europe or any group of universities in Europe?
So I'd say it differs in two main ways. The first is that it's truly international. The people who participate in the programme are drawn from across our entire network. So they get to learn about other academic cultures, indeed other cultures across Europe through the programme. But we also draw on the resources of our universities and their networks. So it's truly international in the sense of how we deliver the programme as well. And that's very different from the sort of national or even just university focused training that you often get. I think the second way in which it's different is that it's both broader and more sustained than the sort of training programmes that individual universities can offer. So often you can sign up for a course or a series of courses on different things, whereas what we offer is a comprehensive programme over the course of 2 years that covers a wide range of professional skills, which are relevant not only to policymakers but to whatever area the scholars might decide to work in the future.
And tell us a bit about how the scholars are chosen and the diversity of backgrounds that they come from, both demographically but also intellectually.
So we have two sets of criteria. One are broadly speaking academic, so you have to be achieving very high academic standards within your own university context, and there's a threshold criteria for that. But there's also a series, if you like, kind of interpersonal criteria. So we're looking for people who are interested in leadership and people who are committed to the public good, people who've shown that they have contributed to society in some way and that they intend to continue to do so in the future. And because we're very much a Europe-focused programme, also that they're committed to the public good within Europe and making Europe a more responsible force in the world.
And you accompany them personally in a way throughout their journey as Europaeum scholars, which is a 20-month programme. Tell us a bit about how that programme is structured. What are the different components of it?
So there's a training route through which is professional skills like negotiation skills, how to engage with the media, how to write policy proposals. We have a number of workshops, some longer, some shorter, which are about how you think about leadership, encouraging the scholars to decide what sort of leader they want to be and where their own ethical lines in the sand might be. We obviously do institutional visits to the main EU and multilateral institutions. In fact, just back from a week in Geneva where we visited the WTO and the UN. And we hear from a wide range of policymakers, journalists, other stakeholders and academics about some of the cutting edge issues of the day.
And during this time, presumably the scholars, they're all doctoral candidates in different ways, they must grow in terms of their skills, in terms of their confidence, in terms of their intellectual breadth. That must give you a certain satisfaction. Tell us a bit about that growing process that you witness and nurture.
Yeah, it's a great privilege to see how the different scholars develop. And they vary quite a bit in range and background. They come from all across Europe. Some come from outside Europe. Some are in the early 20s. Some are in the early to mid 30s. But there are some very interesting stories. So there are people who thought that they were only ever going to be academics who are now applying for jobs at the European Commission, because they didn't think that, say, as a historian or a classicist, that that world was open to them, and we showed them that it was. Equally, we've got people who were interested in politics before and who are now in quite senior positions within their own national political infrastructure, and who would say that we've helped them move more quickly through the system than they might otherwise have done. We also have people who had major life changes during the programme. So we've got a number of female scholars who've started their families either during or just after the programme. And in at least one case, her experience on the programme led her and her partner to decide to move countries and think about building their family in a different part of Europe because it was more family friendly.
So one of the principles of the Europeum is to try to create sort of new leaders for a new Europe. Do you see that as something which is really directly contributing to that process?
I think we are, and we try to model the sorts of attributes that we'd like to see in the scholars in the future. And I think we've only been going for 8 years. We already have some people who've taken on quite senior roles within their field, and it's going to be very exciting to see these people taking on even more senior positions and more of our alumni going through the ranks in their different sectors over the next 10 years.
Now, you've been in charge of four cohorts already, 2018 to 19, 20 to 21, 22, 23, and now 24, 25. Presumably one of the biggest challenges must have come during the COVID period. I mean, how did you handle that when suddenly you couldn't have them physically meeting together? And was that a serious problem?
So it did take us a couple of months to decide exactly what to do when we talked to the people who'd been admitted onto the programme. To put this into context, the lockdown in the UK happened, I think it was 2 weeks before the second cohort was due to start. And I think they'd all agree they didn't quite have the same experience as the cohorts we've met in person. But what was really interesting was some of the scholars in that cohort found that this gave them a community that they wouldn't otherwise have had. And so it helped to support them through COVID. I think COVID also, to some extent, influenced some of the projects that we had, particularly one which was about youth mental health and unemployment. In the context of potential job losses, as far as we were understanding it, that would come from COVID on top of relatively low employment rates for young people still in certain parts of Europe following the global financial crisis, it was very much on their minds as to what some of their peers who weren't in university might be doing.
And for you personally, what would you say have been kind of highlights of this process, whether in terms of actual events and things that you witnessed, or in terms of the broader experience that it's offered?
It's very difficult to pick out any individual moments. I think the proudest moment is always at the end of each cohort when I see what they've produced. And they've always produced something original and interesting and that could make a potential difference to Europe. And that ultimately is what we're all about.
And obviously thoughts are now being given to a fifth cycle, a fifth cohort for 2026 to 2027. If you had complete free rein, how would you reinvent or develop it? And what do you think in any case are likely to be the more natural evolutions to take it forward to the next stage?
So I think we need to be thinking increasingly about some of the global challenges which are affecting Europe. And that is very much embedded in the thinking for the next cohort. So, for instance, we want to have three themes in addition to a kind of multilateral governance, Europe's place in the world, transatlantic theme, which will come into one of the modules. So with the way that democracy is evolving in Europe, we really need to be thinking about democratic resilience and depolarization. Equally, we need to figure out ways democratically to respond to the climate crisis and to improve our adherence to the sustainability development goals, sustainable development goals. And finally, with the emergence of new technologies, and particularly how quickly AI and virtual reality are moving, and with the prospect of the digital euro, we really want to focus in on how those new technologies are interacting with the policy sector, both in terms of how policymakers are thinking about regulating them, but also the potential opportunities that they offer up for the better delivery of policies to citizens.
Now, I mean, you've been immersed effectively in pan-European education now for eight or more years. Has that experience, not just in the European, but what you've seen of European higher education, because you've obviously visited pretty much every single one of the 17 universities that are in the European family at the moment and all their different countries, has it changed your attitude to Europe in any way?
I think I was always very pro-European from that point of view. No, I mean, it makes me even sadder that the UK decided to go ahead with Brexit and that my country folk voted for it in the first place. And I mean, I think what has shifted is that there's much greater scope for European cooperation now, perhaps, than there was before, even if it's still a bit patchy and it's still very much focused on specific areas. And that's something, of course, that we're very dedicated to here at the Europea. And we can see our own scholars and the people who come on our core programmes also being very committed to that process too.
So would you say now you're more pro-European, or just that you've got a better understanding of Europe as a result of being part of the Europeum?
I think definitely got a better understanding of Europe as being a part of the Europeum. I mean, not least because I get to hear about all of these inside policy takes from experts that I wouldn't get as an early modern historian who was interested in policy, which was my life before. I was always very pro-European. And I think as well, perhaps I didn't fully understand the European higher education landscape in quite the same way as I do now, because I was experiencing it through networks on my area, which is early modern diplomacy, or through just going to conferences, again, usually on history. Whereas now I've got a sense of how it works across humanities and social sciences more broadly, about some of the big lobbying groups and so on.
And in our last couple of minutes, I mean, obviously you've got a very privileged perspective and viewpoint on European higher education institutions, because you're seeing what's going on across an entire continent. I mean, how do you see the challenges which European higher education faces, and how best to deal with them in the various countries and from the various perspectives that you've seen?
Well, I think we've got a very unique environment where, on the one hand, you know, most countries are, and at European level, we're paying a lot of lip service to the importance of higher education and to the importance of research and development. I mean, just look at Ursula von der Leyen's recent announcement of the fund to tempt academics who are in America facing an uncertain future back into Europe, and the amount of money that's put into Horizon Europe. But at the same time, at national level, we're facing, particularly in public universities, increasingly constrained budgets, sometimes because universities are fearing that there might be in deficits in the future rather than because they actually are. And I think that's a very challenging environment in which to be delivering a European vision, but it's one nonetheless where it's even more valuable than it might otherwise have been.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts and reflections with us here on these European interviews. Every 2 months, as part of our routine newsletter, which we generate for the European community, we talk with somebody who's been centrally involved in a variety of different ways in the development of the Europeum and how it goes to its next stage of development. So I'd like to thank Tracy very much for joining us on this occasion, and look forward to the next interview in this series shortly. Thank you and goodbye.